I got a safety pillow and a 50-foot rope in case it sinks, because I don't know how deep it is. And so he freaks out. He jumps out, throttles wide open. It nosedives. He's in like 6 foot of water or less. Anyhow, he swims over there. The pirate ship is in a nosedive. The motor's outside spinning. Everything's floating out. There goes the pillow. The pillow worked really good. And there goes the rope. And the pontoons would not let it sink. No way. So the pontoons worked, and they kind of keep it stable. But it's like a soap box derby car. It's a one person, can't be too big, little boat. And then I got a 5-speed big trolling motor. You put it in fifth and you go, and you get out 20 feet or so, and you go into slow motion. Am I moving? If you steer, you'll figure out if you're moving. It's so different. It's so, yeah, life in slow motion. Nothing.
So hitchhiking over to Germany that time to save my mate. I get there and he's like, I'm fine. I just wanted to get you the fuck out of Britain. I was like, you're fucking kidding me. He's like, no, I'm good. I'm like, hey. So anyway, ended up hitchhiking all around Europe for like 10 months. That's 1,700 quid back in the day when you sleep in fields and only eat bread and red peppers.
Ooh,
that lasted the full 10 months, no worries. So the next time I was on a motorbike, just happened to, we'd been all through Italy on Stromboli, climbed the most active volcano in the world at the time, blah, blah, blah. He says, let's go to Amsterdam. I'm like, on the way to Sweden. All right, we'll have 2 days in Amsterdam. Get to Amsterdam, pitch your tents at the campsite closest to the town centre. Well, that 2 days turned into 3 weeks without us even knowing it. And you're supposed to move your tent every 2 days. So we should have known that. They were like, move your tent every 2 days so this lush grass doesn't get messed up.
So
after 3 weeks, I hadn't moved my tent. Somebody gave me a bit of cake. I didn't drink any alcohol at the time for like 6 years, but someone gave me a bit of cake. Didn't tell me it was space cake. I'm like tripping balls for like days. And then the campground attendant comes over and he tells me basically get off of this piece of land. And I'm like, okay. So I pack up my rucksack. Same one as in the Eddie the Eagle movie, actually. It was green and purple. And one of the dudes was a biker on the campsite. He's like, it's going to be hard to get out of town hitchhiking back down to the south of Germany. He's like, I'll give you a ride on my bike. He had the Kawasaki LTD 1000.
Cool.
This was 1990, about October, November. Puts me on the back of that, through the tunnels, drops me at the nearest rest stop, gas station, whatever you call it here. I can't even remember what you call it now that I'm talking about this. I've been here 21 years. What do you call it? A rest stop.
Yeah, a rest stop.
Drops me there. I can stick my thumb out of my mind and start hitching again. So that was my next bike. So I was still looking to get a bike. My whole life I've been looking to get one, and you just never quite get to it.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, now's the season. I mean, I'm a guy that's always compulsively buying them off Craigslist, and this season from about October to February is when they're cheap.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm always looking for deals this time of year because it's very seasonal. People, once it starts to get cold and dark, they need a little cash. They start selling them cheap. And then when it gets warm and nice outside, the value goes up. So
yeah.
I tell all my friends that say, I'm really looking for a bike. It's like, well, tell me what you're looking for, and I'll put it on my radar, because the stuff's out there, and there's just phenomenal deals this time
Almost
of year.
Everything's out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who's are the three bikes out there? In which order?
Mine's the crazy Goldwing with the cow skull on the front of it. I just built that for Dirtbag Challenge, a build-off.
What's Dirtbag Challenge?
It's a build-off where you build a bike in under 2 months for under $2,000.
Oh, sweet.
And then there's a 3-day, 300-mile ride you go on, camp overnight a couple nights, and if you make it to the end, you're in a show, and they have different prizes for different categories of bikes and stuff.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, it's a real institution. And I also wanted to give a shout-out to our friend Paulo from Dirtbag Challenge. He's doing a very interesting project in the next coming months with a Filipino cultural organization where they're restoring this kind of strange Filipino vehicle. It's a lot like, if you've ever seen the Indian tuk-tuk.
I was going to say, a tuk-tuk?
Kind of like a tuk-tuk.
I've been in a few of them, actually, in India.
This particular one is a Rebel 250 with some kind of tuk-tuk-like sidecar. So they're going to be restoring that, and he's doing a documentary on that. And somehow I got roped into doing all the electrics because everybody saw my wiring skills at Dirtbag Town.
Yeah, it's like having a pickup truck.
Now they're like, can you do the electrics for
it? Yeah, I saw pictures of it. Somebody didn't know how to weld and they used mostly rebar.
Yeah.
No
this
kidding.
This apparently is all made with rebar.
I went through Asia for 6.5 months after living in Germany for 3.5. And like the next bike I was looking at was, KZ500 in Saigon to drive up to Hanoi. Has anyone heard of that bike? I was looking up before I got here.
The KZ500. The Hell Rats. Jim had one, and I think 82, 83. It was a kickstart blue one.
They were so popular in Vietnam. You could buy one in Saigon or Hanoi, whichever one. I think it's a 1,700 kilometer, like 1,000 mile journey. And you just buy one, put your rucksack on, and drive up the. So I was supposed to do that, but the American girl I was traveling with at the time, we got on a test drove. I was like, "This is brilliant." She's like, "That no effing way. Are we going 1,000 miles?" And I was like, "Come on." She's like, "No, we're getting the train." I'm like, "So that was my next time to buy a bike," and I got like. Shut down.
Well, did she regret her decision on the train, though? Because the trains can be rather crowded as well.
The train was... We were actually very fucking lucky that we got the train. I didn't even know what a typhoon was until I got to Da Nang.
Yeah.
They're like, there's a typhoon coming in. I was like, ah, that sounds cute, a typhoon.
Yeah, what does that mean?
There's no internet at the time, and I was like, a typhoon? Oh, it sounds like a bit of water coming in. So it's actually the same as a hurricane. It's exactly the same as a hurricane.
No shit.
It's just a different...
It's more water.
It's just wind.
It's just the Asian name for a hurricane. It's
gotcha.
So the train, the swell, we're going up on the train, and suddenly we're only on water, and the train's built up about 3 feet up, and we're just on water. And I'm like, how come we're going to cross the freaking ocean here? Like, and everyone's panicking, and I'm just going, oh, this is awesome. Like, it's a bit windy.
And walking on water.
Everyone's like, the windows are open. Like, it's like real old rickety train, and I'm just going, this is freaking great. There's little islands all over the place. There's people in houses battening down the hatches. I'm like, wow, it must be getting a bit stormy out there. So we get to Da Nang, and the train stops, and they're like, fucking, everyone's rushing off, and I'm just standing there, and my girlfriend and I are just going, yeah, what the fuck's happening? And somebody comes up, they're like, get off the train. And we're like, why? And they're like, typhoon. I'm like, yeah, it must be really big typhoon, whatever that means. Still didn't even know. So this person escorts us into a breeze block building with no windows. And there's this old gentleman there. I have a picture of me and him. He looks like Ho Chi Minh. The guy's about 90, and he's just cowered down behind this breeze block open window. And he just motions for us to come, like, sit beside him. So we do. Like, this hurricane was 14 hours, right? We sat in that breeze block. There's fucking Dorothy who was flying past the window.
The houses
were flying by the window. Everything. Nothing actually came into this opening. It was only like 3 foot by 3 foot. No window in it or anything. Totally bare breeze block structure. And we just sat it out for 14 hours. And I was like, oh, that was a typhoon. All right.
I don't want to come by those again.
So we come out in the morning the next day, and it's just devastation. There's fucking coconuts and palm trees and fucking tables. Everything's just destroyed. I'm like, that.
Holy moly.
Whoa, that's fucking insane.
That's a typhoon.
That's a typhoon. But then the next train is... So that train left somehow. I don't know where it fucking went, because we had to wait another 10 hours for the next one. I was like, where the fuck did the train go that I just got off? But it must have got everyone off and just pissed off and gone like, I'm getting out of here.
Got in a mountain tunnel or something, you know?
Yeah, it went somewhere. Yeah. So we were stuck there for a good-ass long time. But after the storm, so fucking calm. It was beautiful. Just in all the rubble and everything around us, all the thatch lying about, we just right the table up, put a chair down, and this person just came out of somewhere and brought us a little cup of coffee, like a cup of Vietnamese coffee.
Oh,
no,
awesome.
No food or anything. Just like, it wasn't a cafe. They were like, they just very graciously gave us. I was like, fuck it, Vietnamese coffee is the best. Condensed milk with a drip thing on the top, dripping down. Had one of them. Yeah.
Well, they were just good, trying to let's get back to normal. And,
so I was, everything was just back to normal. I was very fucking lucky I was not on that KZ500 because I wouldn't have had a fucking clue. I was like, just getting a bit windy.
Was the last with you when you guys all hunkered down for 14 hours?
Yep, totally.
Oh, holy moly.
Yeah.
Now, when you mentioned that earlier, was there a roof structure or were you
There was a roof. Okay, yeah, there was a roof. I don't even remember looking up. I have a slide of it. It's a beautiful slide.
It was like a bunker. Picture.
You guys hunkered down. No, it wasn't a bug. The window was open. I swear it was, like, just open. And we never got sucked out, and nothing came in. Because it must have been just going like that and just flying. I remember just looking out. The guy just kept pushing us down, going, don't fucking look up. And I got my head chopped off. Yeah.
Yeah, wow, that's amazing.
I've been lucky so far on not buying bikes.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, crazy storms. Yeah, so let's get some music on for a second. 7 o'clock. Oh,
can we have Business Dick's Metal Surf?
What?
Since we're talking about surf and typhoons, can you get that on there?
I didn't bring it.
Oh,
we'll work on it.
It's on the internet.
Oh, well, we do it.
No, we do vinyl here.
Oh, really?
Sorry.
I should have brought
all vinyl all the time.
We're just about to do our vinyl.
No iPods and iPads here. We are.
It's funny. We're just about to release our album in the next couple of months.
That's something
good.
New.
Gotta
we'll
bring
have
it
to work
bring
on.
It in. We'll talk about that in the next part about your album. Yar.
We never had a request like that before.
Right? And we found a pianist, too, but that's a different thing. One of our mates found one this morning. Shane is a... Yar. Shane over at Bender's is a classical pianist.
You were telling me that's an amazing story about
how he went out. Yeah. We'll talk about that in our segment soon. Milk Crate, what do we got going on?
We've got local band from Oakland, the Phenomenauts.
Phenomenauts,
excellent.
Yeah. Welcome back to Racer's Alley. Holy moly. It's 7:10. Mutiny Radio here. And yeah, we were gone for about a month, 3 weeks or so. And also, we had a bunch of technical difficulties. So even when we were here, we kind of weren't. So anyways, we're getting everything together. And talking about that, here at Racer's Alley, you know, we are with Mutiny Radio, and we're a part of their pirate ship and pirate team. And Pamtastic is running the boat. She's our captain, and she does Mutiny Radio. And on Mutiny Radio, they have actually comedy. So you can always get on Mutiny Radio, www.mutinyradio.fm. But she runs a couple of shows. You know, she has her. I guess you could say, if you want to be a comedian, you know, she has her work, you know, the, you know, workshop. So you can always come in here on Mondays, I believe, from around 6 or something, and have the workshop. And if you want to be a comedian, you come in here, and it'd be nice if all you workshop people actually donate $10 or something, you know. Anyhow, yeah, come in here, got your 10-minute skit or something. You go over it. Everyone critiques it. You get out in front of a mic and be live, and, you know, you kind of like it's a beginning of becoming a comedian, and it's a really nice thing. And so it's like she said, it's a workshop. And like I said, why don't you folks start paying money if you're on a workshop? I'm getting sick of that. Anyways, on Fridays, if you all want to come in, from the workshop, you can always come on the Pamtastic Comedy Clubhouse or before that open mic. And what's neat is it's like being a racer, going from a track day to actually racing. You know, you come in finally on a Friday, you get in front of people, you know. And and as far as coming to the clubhouse, the happy hour open mic is different than being on the clubhouse. Once you're there, your name's released, and you know, a little bit bigger, you're finally in as far as getting in to be a comedian. So it's really, really neat. And I've thought about it myself, and it's really a cool place to be if you want to start learning how to be a comedian. And why would you do that? Well, if you're shy, that's a good way to pick up girls. If you're not, it's a good way to be humiliated and learn a little bit of humbleness. You know, I mean, it really is actually very humbling to sit out there and have no one actually laugh. I mean, it's true. I mean, this is why I thought about this. A while back, I was sitting here on the one of her shows. I think it was the open mic. And this gentleman came up, a young guy, probably 23, 24. And he's like, "Arr, arr, arr," and you could hear the crickets. It's like, and he goes, "Arr, arr, arr," and hear the crickets. Like, oh boy, well, I guess I need work on my gig. But I still got 3 minutes or 10 minutes or 8 minutes, so I'm gonna sit out here and try and keep going. Everyone in the audience, all 8 of us, we clapped. You know, I mean, this guy is just like sitting there just drowning. But he still has 8 minutes on his time, and he's going to sit there and do it. That's what I'm talking about, you know, when you have your joke workshop. I mean, that's this guy, obviously, you know, he sat there and took it. And if you're going to be in any type of industry where you're going to be out there and put your neck out and, you know, want to be in front of a bunch of people, you got to take your licks. And I was just talking to Pam about this the other night. She spent a lot of years taking her licks, where you go out there and you're various audiences and no one's laughing, and you just like got to tough it out, you know, that type of thing. So this boy toughed it out, and it taught me a big lesson. I was really proud of the guy for doing it, for doing his show, you know. So it's pretty neat like that, you know. Got to do your thing, you know. Got to believe. Anyhow, so here we are back here at Mutiny Radio at Racer's Alley, and thank you, Pam, for having us. And also, you can always push a donate button on www.mutinyradio.fm or on our Facebook page or whatever. And you can always call us here at Racer's Alley if you want to thank your sponsors. Very important. It's the end of the year now, folks. You can always either call in or have us read out. Thank you, Mom, Dad. Thank you, sponsors. Thank you, Dunlop. Thank you, girlfriend. Thank you, dog. And thank you, my goddamn Toyota truck, for not breaking down. Right? So thank you, Brian, for the Toyota truck, by the way. And so you can always donate $10 here to keep our ship running. and we'll be happy to just like either read out or you can call in and thank everyone yourself. It's on a podcast. You can always keep that because there's nothing better than letting folks know you appreciate them, especially after a year of racing and you still owe them $1,500. So there you go. So cheers. Anyhow, what were we talking about earlier? What do we need to get back to, fellas? What were we saying?
I think we're chatting about the last bikes that I was on.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, like Chiang Mai in north of Thailand. Rented a couple of little beaters. I think they were 125 something. I don't even remember the name of them. For some reason, I remember the KZ 500, yeah, from Vietnam. But in Thailand, I don't think it had anything on it. I think the guys built them themselves, driving around in the jungles there with literally snakes, like 10-foot long snakes that, yeah, somebody ran over in front of me right over the head, and it was writhing about. I had to go around that one.
Holy moly.
But the one person I was riding with at the time then, I don't remember what the name of it is, but she dropped her bike on her leg. So the exhaust just heavy.
Just melted her.
Oh, yes.
Melted her. There's a specific name for it in Asia because people go there who've never ridden a bike before.
They do that always.
Yeah.
Back in the 70s, there was a commonality of bikes getting the old thigh burn or the
calf burn. Calf burn. Yeah. Man, it was blistered in the jungle. Horrible.
You ever do that, Wade?
Oh.
Yep.
You ever been in that?
I think everybody did somewhere.
Exactly. Yeah, that's part of the deal.
Feeling my leg where the last time I did that was, and just feel that pain.
Yeah. Right.
So on my 21st birthday, I stopped drinking because in Scotland you start about when you're about 14.
Yeah.
I stopped for a day on my 21st birthday. I was just finishing up university. I was like, I need to get past this. I ended up not drinking for 6 years, but I ended up buying my first motorbike then. So I did own my first bike ever. It was I bought it off this dodgy Scottish dude in Edinburgh, down at the docks in Leith. You find it in the newspaper then, like Craigslist. I don't know if your kids know, but it was in the ads in the newspaper.
We used to have Cycle Trader here.
Oh no, this was just a regular rag. We just happened to have one motorbike, and I was like, I'll take that. I go down, and he's like, mate, it's not got this lever on the side. And I was like, what's that? What lever? He's like, the thing you kick it with. And I knew nothing about motorbikes. I just knew I wanted one. I'd never been on one or anything. And he's like, what I do is I just run down the street with it, and I just jump start it. And I was like, okay. So you don't really need that thing on the side. And he's like that. Nah, you don't need that. And me being the dumbass goes, all right, I'll fucking buy that off you. So I buy them. It was a Kawasaki 125 red with a gold thing across the tank.
Nice.
Looked great.
Yeah.
Looked great. That's all that mattered when you've never been on a bike or had anything to do with bikes. So for the first 2 months I'm on it, I'm going to a motorbike class. I'm like, I'll take 6 weeks of classes twice a week.
Yeah.
And I take it down there, and they're like, you're missing your Kickstarter. I was like, no, no, you just run with it. You just run, and you just like... And he's like, nice. No, you're missing your Kickstarter.
What's a Kickstarter?
I was like, well, it didn't have it. He told me there was something missing, but I didn't know. And he showed me how to get it working.
This is a push and run.
That's exactly what it was.
It's a new model.
I swear.
Awesome.
So he says to me, he goes, all right, do this class in the next class, and we'll put you in the class after that, but you need to get this fixed because we can't just be watching you run down the street every time we stop to talk about how you're driving and talk about your riding. We just can't do that. I was like, okay. So I take it down to this dodgy back end alley garage, and I go to the guy. Yeah, I'm missing the Kickstarter. He was like, no shit, fucking genius,
dumb kid.
And I'm like, yeah. So I think I'm 20.
Can't you make me one?
I'm 21 at the time. I was like, well, how much is that going to cost me? Because I thought you'd just stick it on, you know. I was like, you just stick a Kickstarter on. No, he's like, I still don't know how he did it, but you got to strip the whole fucking thing down to put a new one in, yeah?
Oh, it was boy, like, it was the totally shaft gone. Was broken.
Oh, it was totally gone. There was
yeah,
nothing.
Yeah, there was like even sheer... the spline sticking out.
No, oh, there was nothing. No, there was absolutely zero there. it was...
But he needed parts.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so that cost me on top of the... I think I've paid £475 for it.
Jeez.
At the time, in that was in 1989, and then it cost me another. I think it cost me just under 100 quid to put that on.
Oh boy, I thought it would be more. So good.
Yeah. Well, I don't remember exactly, but I think I'd priced it, and it was almost the same price as the bike or something. I was like, what the fuck?
It was a push and go. Come on,
just kept it push and go.
I love
but
that.
It was
just
fucking,
park at the top of the hill.
Yeah.
Whenever you stop, and roll
cars
down.
Like that.
So I just bust up with my girl at the time. So I moved in with my grandparents. Got this Kickstarter fixed on the bike. I'm not drinking because I've now got a bike. I'm like, all right, I'm just going to go out every night still with all my mates and now have a motorbike to go around on. My grandfather went fucking mad. He was like, that. Don't be bringing around this neighborhood. There's no bikers in this neighborhood. This is a fucking nice neighborhood. What did you do buying a fucking motorbike? And my gran's going, leave him alone. He's only young. Yeah, he could have asked me to buy a motorbike. So every night I went out, I used to have to turn it off like a block and a half away and just roll it down and then push it through the garden like, through the garden and leave it outside, and every morning I'd get home at like 3 a.m. My grandfather was an awesome dude. He gave my grandmother breakfast in bed every day of her life.
Awesome.
But when the grandchildren stayed, including myself, you got up at 5:30 every fucking morning, right? And the way he got you out of bed, he'd make breakfast first. He'd take it to my gran, then he'd make bacon, egg, total fried breakfast every time, and then he'd come in with a golf club, and he'd start at the bottom of the bed, and he'd walk in, and you wouldn't hear him the first time, and you'd just hear bam at your feet, and he'd miss you by that, and you had to move or he'd fucking it. So you were like, and then you go bam bam until you're out the fucking bed.
Squeeze you like a roll of toothpaste.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But at least you had some bacon, eggs, and bangers, and
I learned how to ride a bike over those I had 12 lessons, which was really important because I'd never been on one because I didn't know what a fucking Kickstarter was. So
you had a push starter.
So I had 12 weeks of lessons, and like I used to love just getting kitted up in my CD gear. You know what? I still have the Scott motorbike jacket in my house today, and it still fits me.
Sweet.
from 1989.
Oh,
still
awesome.
Have it. It's a blue with aluminum lining, leather,
nice.
Short stuff. Still have it. So if anyone wants it. Oh, I should wear it for Halloween. Too ghoul for school.
There you go. Halloween's coming up.
But yeah. So that bike was awesome. I used to go out in the pissing rain in Scotland, and what I'd learned on the course, and I strongly recommend that anyone who's never been on a bike get some lessons, especially in the city, going across railway tracks
Oh yeah, you see everybody go down on those.
Yeah, there's a ladies' club, isn't there? That Ems and Katie are part of.
Well, Dames Don't Care. Emily
Dames Don't
should
care.
Probably here be here next week.
Yes.
Yeah, well, there's a curve unit, but yeah, there's quite a few ladies' clubs out there.
Yeah, but that one, Dames Don't Care. Total respectful. Like a friend of mine, Emma, not Emily. Just bought a bike. They invited her into that. Get a couple of lessons first. Don't think you can do it. Another mate of mine crashed 4 times, and now he's not doing bikes anymore.
Yeah, but it's very easy to be discouraged if you just go out there.
Yeah.
You know. I recommend getting really drunk first. That way it doesn't hurt. You know, and then next time you'll forget, and then you can just go on doing it again. But in all seriousness, Racer's Alley doesn't condone that type of thing. Though we really do recommend it. So we're going to take a little bit of a break here, and
drink,
we'll be back.
Drink, don't drive.
Right?
Or drink, don't ride.
That's
why
I drink across
ride,
the street from my apartment.
Actually,
only a
yeah, exactly.
Home.
You know, yar. Anyways, let's put on some music, Milk Crate.
Ah, thanks, Brian.
Holy moly. So back here at Racer's Alley, Mutiny Radio in the heart of the Mission. Yeah, thanks for joining us again. Like I said, we were actually not here for about 3 weeks. We were here and we had technical difficulties and yar yar, whatever they may be. Anyhow, there's a thing. There was a big old meeting, like I said earlier, over at the Motor Gold for that big-ass ride for the Women's World Rally stuff, right? Okay, at that time, there's a guy, Clay Murphy. He is a San Francisco Motorcycle Club member, old school. He's a good boy. And what he's doing right now is he's running an organization that he wants to start, firstrides.org. He wants to help kids love bikes. And basically, right now, he's looking for any type of donations for motorcycle gear for kids, anytime 15, 16 on down. Smaller stuff is better, as well as, motorcycles. If you guys have shit lying around that haven't ridden forever, I mean, any bike is a bike for a kid. I mean, even a Briggs & Stratton. So firstrides.org, basically, they're trying to have an organization, Clay's running, that allow, kids who would not normally be able to ride a motorcycle, per se, and volunteering. He's looking for, all the gear and all the bikes, as well as if you want to help teach kids to ride, do that as well. Anyway, so we had a huge-ass bag of shit from a huge-ass bag of gear, from Tony Nunez. He's an AFM racer, by the way. He's really badass. And he gave a whole bunch of gear, a whole bunch of boots, and that was really, really cool. One of the SFMC boys came and picked it up from Tokyo Motor the other day, and that being said, if you want to give to firstrides.org, we're looking for any type of motorcycle gear, motorcycle stuff, even if you want to volunteer and help. I believe they're doing all this out of Carnegie, by the way, and that season's coming soon.
Go Carnegie.
Go Carnegie. And you can always drop off any gear at vendors.
You drop me off a Kickstarter, please.
Yeah, we need a Kickstarter as well. And drop it off at vendors, Tokyo Moto, or Molotovs. As well as SFMC. So if you have anything for the kids, firstrides.org, Clay Murphy's putting this together, and it's a really, really good program because, we all start somewhere. And,
Or if you got a kid that needs to be there.
Exactly. Good point, Wade. If you don't have any way to teach them,
where was it when we were all little kids? That's a great idea, totally great idea. We have a big kid over here, so I have a question about for a new big kid. But anyhow, if you show up, I'm sure they'll teach you something.
I need to be taught again. I need to be retaught.
There you go. Yeah, get you out there. You are, for sure. So firstrides.org. Bring any gear, benders. Thank you, Johnny, who's over there all the time for having our shit in your way. It's really, really cool. Last time, like I said, Tony Nunez brought in a big bin, huge old garbage bag full of gear for the kids. That's really, really awesome. And thank you. And Tony's ex-AFM racer, AFM racer. We started talking. It's like, I need to get me an FCR 400. And I go, I need to two. So hopefully he'll get one out there and be a racer again.
400 class.
Right? It's a new big thing. It's always been. Anyways, thank you, Benders. Thank you, Tokyo Moto. And especially Molotovs as well. All three of those folks. It's very important to be able to drop off stuff, so it's really, really cool. And also here at Mutiny Radio, I was talking to Pam. If you ever need to drop off anything, drop it off here at Mutiny as well. That does not include garbage or anything that's smelly. All right. So, what?
Yeah, so while you're there, have a pint. Have something to eat at countertop. Have a game of pool of Molotovs. Have a couple of drinks.
Tip your bartender.
Leave your stuff and tip. Those bartenders.
Always tip your bartenders. Yar. Thank you, actually. That's a big deal. I mean, wherever you go, I mean, obviously, it's, all these folks that I'm talking about, I mean, they're great establishments to actually stay at and hang out and stuff. I mean, you meet family-type people and a bunch of cool folks, so that's really, really neat.
All the services.
Jake. Shane, the pianist, and Jake and Pam all work at Countertop there. The food is absolutely delicious at Bender's. goes really well with any pint you choose, any sandwich, any tater tots, any burger. All delicious.
Yeah, they've actually lately they just had a what do you call it, a TV dinner. And that was pretty neat. I think Shane thought that one up, where you had, well, actually, folks of a certain age would not know what that means, but aluminum foil dish with everything segregated from the apple pie to the mashed potatoes.
Ooh.
Remember those, Wade?
Nice. Oh, back home.
Yeah. So.
That's how Mom used to cook.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, that was a thing back then. It was like being a spaceman or something. But, yeah. Yeah, so the Appenders is actually, they're always doing great things, and they just really did have a nice TV dinner, so to speak, with kielbasas and sauerkraut with really great garlic mashed potatoes and really nice apple something thingy, which is always in your actually TV dinner. Anyhow, boy, let's see here. We thanked Clay over here. AFM, boy, their last race is coming this weekend. Have a great time, all you folks out there, I believe, at Thunder Hill. And I want to say thank you to AFM for always being out there for us. My year didn't end up, I shut my year down early, but I'll be out there next year and maybe on a few different bikes. And, thank you, Barbara. Thank you, all the turn workers especially. And I hear the next weekend is going to have a turn worker appreciation. So anyone out there, if you can, send them a good shout out. And also, here, actually, you can always call me at 415-550-0501, or you can reach me at Face of My Book, Racer's Alley. If you ever want to donate to the turn workers anything, I'll make sure it gets out to those folks. But, without them, we wouldn't be able to race. And, it's a very, very, it's not an easy job to be out there. So, RER. So thank you, AFM, and thank you, turn workers. And we'll see you next year, as far as I'm concerned. Definitely, for sure, at Button Willow. And Wade, you got any organizations you want to say thank you to?
SRA West, WERA, ARMA.
WERA and
ARMA. I forget how you say it, but the ones in Oregon and Washington also.
OMRRA and Washington
WERMA. Yeah.
Sorry, folks. We'll do our homework in Oregon and Washington, and next week we'll be there in a couple weeks. Yeah, exactly. As far as the racing's all winding down, you'll see a lot of folks either gearing up for next year or trying to find sponsors. I mean, it's usual end of the year shuffle. And all you racers this next weekend, keep it up. Don't be a hero on the last race, and everyone
unless
have a good old fun time. Unless you are one, right? Da, da, da.
There you go.
There you
go. And that goes for Lodi and dirt ride and stuff.
Yeah, it's Halloween. Yeah, you could rollerball it. I can't even say that.
Rollerball
it.
Right? Yeah. So good times racing out there. And Wade, I don't think we got anything going on racing for the rest of the year, right?
I'm gonna go to
Willow Springs in 2 weeks with WERA.
Okay,
2 weeks, 3 weeks.
What are you running?
Sometime next month, sidecar.
Okay, so the November the WERA.
Yeah,
I had that on my calendar.
I think it's the 7th or something.
So
our restaurant is supposed to be open. Then I can turn around and I can think about going racing for a second.
Well, yes. Yeah,
At least for one more weekend.
Mr. Lindauer, going to be your passenger?
Yeah, we're hoping so. He better. He's getting over a hernia operation.
Holy moly. Eric, feel better, dude.
After all this other stuff.
Yeah,
he's got to be able to put his Superman cape on and let's go flying.
Well, there's no better way to heal than go racing.
That's right. Good shot of adrenaline heals everything.
Exactly.
That's right. I come back from the races 3 years younger every time we go to.
Me too. I stop feeling pain after I do a race, even though I just had a word. Even the bad day of racing is better than a day of anything else.
And, totally.
Yeah, feel that kind of that good or really close to it on the way to the races, or a couple of days ahead of time. You're you're, well, I guess, just getting excited and stuff. Okay, I'm gonna do good and whatever you're doing. Make your faster, jump higher.
Make your
last race I left, I was totally smiling in my truck. I was like, I couldn't even like suppress a smile. I'm going out there, you know, listening to music, and it's Brian's truck, and there you are, got the 636, and you know, it's been a whole battle. I thought I finally fucking go, well, I could say that word tonight.
Battle.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Anyways, boy, oh boy. And in the end,
make it work.
And it was just like, but it's just, I didn't end up really grinning in the end. You know, it's just like, okay, well, we'll finish the race weekend and ride home. But it was the whole act of racing now, you know, is to me, you know, fun getaway. It's you just don't know which way the sails are gonna go, but it's still racing.
Yeah, make your new choice of drug adrenaline. It's free. It's awesome. It lasts for days, and you can just get straight back up on it whenever
well,
you like.
I have a bunch of epinephrine prints if you want to buy any. Anyways, yeah, yeah, I deal in that shit. Anyhow, like I said.
I think racing's better, isn't it?
even though it's a bad
ride your bike
time, it's still fun. You know, it's yeah. Sometimes you fall, right? Or sometimes your kickstand ain't there. But no matter what,
once you learn
on a bike, yeah, you know, it's a good time on a bike. You know, and I mean, shit, Milkway Brian, man, you should have seen his bike before it got stole.
All my
friends are veterans. You know, they're all hard motherfuckers. And they look at his bike, whoa, oh, Jesus, I see some tears coming out of some eyes. The way they left his bike was just so bad.
I've never seen something gutted that thoroughly in my life.
Oh, my God. Like I said,
apart from my cousin in Germany.
there was stuff on top of it, too. And it's just like, all right, you are. But, it's good you're getting it back.
Getting back into the beater lifestyle. You know, I've had too many nice bikes, Alex.
Well, the SR, you'll get back on, right?
It's yeah. Like,
what happened right now? You need to redo the valves?
No, I seized it. I was out joyriding on one of those hot summer days that we had recently because I was stir crazy at home and it was too early to go to the bar to drink. So I decided to do something productive and I decided to ride my SR. And I was winding the crap out of it and it was a hot night. And at one of the stoplights over by Twin Peaks, that motor just started.
Low on oil?
Is that oil in it? I've heard that those Wasecco pistons, after about 500 miles, can have a lot of thermal expansion.
Wiseco?
Yeah, Wiseco.
That sounds a good pickup line for your vintage bike that you take out on your on your Tinder dates.
Maybe,
thermal expansion going on here. Last
piston's going to heat up.
We might have to stop for a minute.
But yes, so that exactly. engine's coming back out, and it's going to get redone again, and we'll see what went wrong the first time. But in the meantime, I've got my eyes on a little Ninja 250 because I need to have a beater again. Need to have a bike that I don't care about if it gets stolen or smashed up or somebody messes with it. I've had too much nice things on the street lately, and they got to stay in the garage.
You know, compared with that SR500, that Ninja 250, if you decide to go to Alice's or Highway 1, you would be amazed how, you know, effective they are.
No, I've owned three of them in my life. They're awesome. Just
look and just body English. I mean, it's just, yeah, they're just carvers.
Yeah, I mean, you can get those down to about 280 pounds if you strip all the crap off of them. So I'm looking forward to that.
And the SR, I believe, was back in the day. I don't know way to. I believe they used to turn that into a flat tracker, right? The SR500. That was the
everything. They still got a whole bunch of flat trackers. Still run them, Lodi and everywhere, and even the Mylar's a bunch of them. There's a whole bunch of them that are still running. Don't see the next one, but the SRs, and don't see too many Hondas either, but a lot of Yamahas. Huh. But some of us actually also made road races out of them.
Well, they're dead simple and they're easy to work on.
Yeah, so I got 100
performance parts available for them.
Did you put a fairing around one, Wade?
Yeah, I got 125 out of my SR.
Wow,
that's a
supposedly
that's pretty
big deal.
Yeah.
600.
Yeah. I was making fiberglass then. I had a quarter fairing, bottom fairing thingy. that I put together with it. And so I was going to ask you what cam you're going to run. Anyhow, I was running the 80 cam on that, and all the little doodads, 40 millimeter pumper carburetor. Yeah. And I started making fairings. And so there was three of us that had identical bikes. They both had professionally built motors. I had to build everything myself, but I made the glass, and I took a lot of time to really, I want to say, perfect how streamlined mine was. I put theirs on and everything, and I did the same thing on everybody's, but I really took extra time on mine.
So you had the factory glass.
I had the factory glass. This is what it's really, really, really supposed to be, and this is how. And so we, anyhow, I beat them both.
Wow. Of course you did. Yeah, and Wade used to, back in the day, for folks out there, motorcycling, you know, they didn't come with plastic and stuff. So like 70s, 80s, that was kind of a thing. But, you know, if you wanted to race and stuff, that had to all be handmade. And geez, Wade, I mean, you started making glass for quite a while back then for a lot of folks. And I've actually helped you move a lot of that glass for many, many different bikes, uppers and lowers and stuff.
Yeah, all kinds of stuff. And when I was born in the city, but I didn't go to school here. And I moved to the city, and I didn't know how to do any of that, but I learned it while I was here.
Gotcha. And,
yeah.
I mean,
we wanted to make fairings.
So, back then, there wasn't a YouTube, and folks out there, listeners, when I say glass, it's fiberglass, so it's like a fairing around an old KC.
I thought we were going Breaking Bad there for a minute. I was like, what the hell? I just walked back in.
There you are. That's the next episode, mate. But anyhow, fiberglass. So Wade used to make fiberglass fairings for old 80s bikes and mid-80s bikes, and that was before people actually made them. Now, you know, there was AirTech went on from there, and now they have shark skin. And back then there was Lockhart Phillips, so there was a bunch of folks out there doing different versions of things. But you know, they would never make what that Wade just made for his Moto Guzzi, and you can find that over on Facebook, Racers Alley, because you custom made a fiberglass that was never made for a bike like that.
Yeah, I had to make a pan.
Exactly.
Custom made pan. I pretty much only do custom stuff now, and I only do it for my team.
And to go faster. You are.
And to go faster, 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 whatever it takes faster.
I mean, that must be fantastic back in the day before they had YouTube and everything, because everyone had their own ideas to do stuff, and you just share them, and it'd like flow like a wave around the planet instead of everyone going, okay, I'm going to do it like that. Yeah. So.
Yeah, exactly. So I kind of got a case on that. So I got a buddy that made this monocoque motorcycle, frame, chassis, blah, blah, blah. They were making them back then. They made them out of Brisbane. There was like three guys doing it. They took them to Sears Point, and they showed the world.
Right.
And they didn't have a patent. And everybody copied them.
No, bummer.
Oh, really? Yeah,
so far, it hasn't really flown and everything to where you could hardly see, but they all have monocoque chassis where they try a little here and there and stuff. Anyhow, I've got one of the originals. And
it's priceless.
Yeah.
Yeah,
seriously,
don't steal
it's like Smithsonian priceless. Anyways, let's going to wind down here, guys. I want to say thank you, Yar. See?
Oh, thank you. I've so enjoyed being here. It's been so chillax.
We'd love to have you back, because I don't think our crew has laughed that much in quite some time. You know,
we'll come back on Monday for a workshop with Pam and like maybe hone it a little bit.
I think you should.
Bit of finesse there.
Definitely. I think that's a great idea.
Come tell a couple jokes.